Law number four, the law of navigation. Anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. In 1911, two groups of explorers set off on an incredible mission. Though they used different strategies and routes, the leaders of the teams had the very same goal: to be the first in history to reach the South Pole. Their stories are life and death illustrations of the law of navigation. One group was led by Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen. Ironically, Amundsen had not originally intended to go to Antarctica. His desire was to be the first man to reach the North Pole. But when he discovered that Robert Peary had beaten him there, Amundsen changed his goal and headed toward the other end of the Earth. North or south, he knew his planning would pay off. Before his team ever set off, Amundsen had painstakingly planned this trip. He studied the methods of the Eskimos and other experienced Arctic travelers and determined that their best course of action would be to transport all of their equipment and supplies by dog sled. When he assembled his team, he chose expert skiers and dog handlers. His strategy was simple. The dogs would do most of the work as the group traveled 15 to 20 miles in a 6-hour period each day. That would afford both the dogs and the men plenty of time for daily rest prior to the following day's travel. Amundsen's forethought and attention to detail were incredible. He located and stocked supply depots all along the intended route. That way, they would not have to carry every bit of their supplies with them the whole trip. He also equipped his people with the best gear possible. Amundsen had carefully considered every possible aspect of the journey, thought it through, and planned accordingly. And it paid off. The worst problem they experienced on their trip was an infected tooth that one man had to have extracted. The other team of people was led by Robert Falcon Scott, a British naval officer who had previously done some exploring in the Antarctic area. Scott's expedition was the antithesis of Amundsen's. Instead of using dog sleds, Scott decided to use motorized sledges and ponies. Their problems began when the motors on the sledges stopped working only 5 days into the trip. The ponies didn't fare well either in those frigid temperatures. When they reached the foot of the Transantarctic Mountains, all of the poor animals had to be killed. As a result, the team members themselves ended up hauling the 200-pound sledges. Scott hadn't given enough attention to the team's other equipment either. Their clothes were so poorly designed that all of the men developed frostbite. One team member required an hour every morning just to get his boots onto his swollen, gangrenous feet. Everyone became snowblind because of their inadequate goggles that Scott had supplied. On top of everything else, the team was always low on food and water. That was also due to Scott's poor planning. The depots of supplies Scott established were inadequately stocked, too far apart, and often poorly marked, which made them very difficult to find. Because they were continually low on fuel to melt snow, everyone became dehydrated. Making things even worse was Scott's last-minute decision to take along a fifth man, even though they had prepared enough supplies for only four. After covering a grueling 800 miles in 10 weeks, Scott's exhausted group finally arrived at the South Pole on January 17, 1912. There they found the Norwegian flag flapping in the wind and a letter from Amundsen. The other well-led team had beaten them to their goal by more than a month. Scott's expedition to the pole is a classic example of a leader who could not navigate for his people. But the trek back was even worse. Scott and his men were starving and suffering from scurvy, yet Scott, unable to navigate to the very end, was oblivious to their plight. With time running out and the food supply desperately low, Scott insisted that they collect 30 pounds of geological specimens to take back, more weight to be carried by the worn-out men. The group's progress became slower and slower. One member of the party sank into a stupor and died. Another, Lawrence Oates, a former Army officer who had originally been brought along to care for the ponies, had frostbite so severe that he had trouble doing anything. Because he believed that he was endangering the team's survival, He purposely walked out into a blizzard to keep from hindering the group. Before he left the tent and headed into the storm, he said, "I'm just going outside. I may be some time." Scott and his final two team members made it only a little further north before giving up. The return trip had taken 2 months, and they still were 150 miles from their base camp. There they died. We know their story only because they spent their last hours updating their diaries. Some of Scott's last words were these: "We shall die like gentlemen. I think this will show that the spirit of pluck and power to endure has not passed out of our race." Scott had the courage, but not leadership. Because he was unable to live by the law of navigation, he and his companions died by it. Followers need leaders able to effectively navigate for them. When they're facing life and death situations, the necessity is painfully obvious. But even when consequences aren't as serious, the need is also great. The truth is that nearly anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. That is the law of navigation. Leaders who navigate do even more than control the direction in which they and their people travel. They see the whole trip in their minds before they leave the dock. They have vision for getting to their destination. They understand what it will take to get there. They know who they'll need on the team to be successful. And they recognize the obstacles long before they appear on the horizon. Before good leaders take their people on a journey, they go through a process in order to give the trip the best chance of being a success. Navigators draw on past experience. Every past success and failure you've experienced can be a valuable source of information and wisdom if you allow it to be. Successes teach you what you're capable of doing and give you confidence. However, your failures often teach you greater lessons. They reveal wrong assumptions, character flaws, errors in judgment, and poor working methods. Ironically, many people hate their failures so much that they quickly cover them up instead of analyzing them and learning from them. Why do I even mention something that seems so basic? Because most natural leaders are activists. They tend to look forward, not backward, make decisions, and then move on. I know this because that is my tendency. But for leaders to become good navigators, they need to take time to reflect and learn from their experiences. Navigators examine the conditions before making commitments. Drawing on experience means looking inward. Examining conditions means looking outward. No good leader plans a course of action without paying close attention to current conditions. That would be like setting sail against the tide or plotting a course into a hurricane. Good navigators count the costs before making the commitments for themselves and others. They examine not only measurable factors such as finances, resources, and talent, but also intangibles such as timing, morale, momentum, culture, and so on. Navigators listen to what others have to say. No matter how good a leader you are, you yourself will not have all the answers. That's why top-notch navigators gather information from many sources. For example, before Roald Amundsen began his expedition to the South Pole, he had learned from a group of Native Americans in Canada about warm clothing and Arctic survival techniques. Those skills and practices meant the difference between failure and success for his team in Antarctica. Navigators make sure their conclusions represent both faith and fact. Being able to navigate for others requires a leader to possess a positive attitude. You've got to have faith that you can take your people all the way. If you can't confidently make the trip in your mind, you're not going to be able to take it in real life. On the other hand, you have to be able to see the facts realistically. You can't minimize obstacles or rationalize your challenges and still lead effectively. If you don't go in with your eyes wide open, you're going to get blindsided. When you prepare well, you convey confidence and trust to people. Lack of preparation has the opposite effect. In the end, it's not the size of the project that determines its acceptance, support, and success. It's the size of the leader. That's why I say that anyone can steer the ship, but it takes a leader to chart the course. Leaders who are good navigators are capable of taking their people just about anywhere.